After two acclaimed story collections, Laura Vandenberg has now written Find Me, her debut novel, a gripping, darkly funny tale of a young woman struggling to find her place in the world. Her first collection of stories, What the World Will Look Like When All the Water Leaves Us, was a Barnes & Noble Discover Great New Writers selection and a finalist for the Frank O'Connor International Short Story Award. Her second collection of stories, The Isle of Youth, received the Rosenthal Family Foundation Award for Fiction from the American Academy of Arts and Letters. Presented by the New York State Writers Institute, Laura Vandenberg will read from Find Me tomorrow at 8 o'clock at the Huxley Theater at the New York State Museum in Albany. Earlier in the day at 4:15 in the afternoon, she will hold an informal seminar in the Standish Room in the Science Library on the UAlbany Uptown campus. It is a great pleasure to welcome Laura Vandenberg to the roundtable. Thank you very much for being with us.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I'm thrilled to be with you this morning.
Well, congratulations on the novel. Congratulations on just a brilliant writing career, and it's very nice that you'll be in our region tomorrow night. I assume when you're writing the stories, there's always that nagging thought that I will write a novel.
Well, yes and no. A lot of my heroes are, you know, primarily short story writers. And so when I was writing my first collection, I really had no plans for a novel and sort of thought, if I always write stories, it's the first form of literature that I fell in love with. It's a form that means a great deal to me, that seemed like, you know, a pretty good way to spend one's time. But at the same time, I, of course, you know, love a lot of novels and novelists. And there is something, both as a reader and as a writer, about being, you know, immersed in a fictional world for a longer duration that can be, you know, really thrilling. So I didn't necessarily feel pressure to write a novel or to feel like I had to write a novel, but when I got, the idea for Find Me, given that it's a dystopian book and it's sort of a more complex world in some ways, you know, immediately that material suggested a larger canvas for me. I couldn't imagine that story existing in the context of a short story.
So tell us about the protagonist in the novel, Joy, and the world, which is a kind of an ironic name, right?
Yes, yes.
Because
yes.
There's not a lot of joy in her life.
Yes, not a lot of joy. I like to think that she begins to, you know, find a little bit as the book progresses. But Joy Jones is a young woman. She's from Boston, where I've lived on and off in the Boston area for quite a while. So that landscape is familiar to me. And prior to this memory-destroying epidemic that devastates the country, she works the graveyard shift at a Stop and Shop. And she has some addiction issues and a very painful past that she's trying her best to cover up.
As you go through, ultimately, what is the story that you wanted to tell? Because there is this sickness that starts to sweep the country that begins with memory loss and then ultimately death.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you know, I think Joy was always the center of the book for me. She was always my North Star in that regard. And so I always saw the novel as being much more about her interior journey as opposed to, you know, looking at sort of the big picture of what a, you know, a societal collapse or major catastrophe would unfold. And in a lot of ways, even though, you know, it's certainly sort of the premise of the book, I do think that I think it would be fair to say that it fades into the backdrop and Joy's, you know, personal narrative really takes over. I think dystopian is a totally appropriate label, but to me it was always more a book about trauma and reckoning with trauma and reckoning about the sort of dark and damaged parts of oneself. And so I think Joy's journey, I think she was a character who had so many walls built up around her that she needed something as big as a national catastrophe to really begin to break down those walls and to move her toward a place of healing.
Now, her healing can take place and her participation can take place, and the idea of this being dystopian and the idea of this illness fading into the backdrop can all happen because Joy is immune to the illness.
Yes, that is a very important point to bring up. Yes, Joy indeed is among the small portion of the population that is immune to the illness.
When you think about the of confronting her issues, you realize that, okay, well, you know, it's one of those things. How much of this? She's really kind of struggling with this, right? Of how much does this have to be about her and dealing with her own stuff while she's helping others?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think particularly the novel is divided into two parts. The first part is set entirely in a hospital in Kansas, and the
right.
second part is set entirely on the road. And I think particularly in the hospital, when she's around other patients who have varying degrees of immunity, that the sort of moral component of that question really comes into play. And, you know, what are my responsibilities to those fellow citizens and fellow patients?
When you were writing it, what were the challenges for you in speaking in that character's voice and coming to some conclusion as to what the story was going to be about?
Yeah, well, I think in some ways, the hospital was very challenging because of it. You know, it's a completely confined environment, and I think trying to find a way to make stasis feel interesting and forward moving was certainly a challenge. But I think actually, in a lot of ways, the second part was ultimately more challenging because, on the one hand, I liberated myself from the stasis, but you know, the possibilities were quite literally endless, and so it took a long time to really find the right series of events that would bring joy to that moment of kind of reckoning with the self and moving into that space of healing. And then there were certainly, you know, more process-oriented challenges that came with moving from short fiction to the novel form.
When you look at that short story form, what was comfortable about it for you?
Well, you know, I think it's funny, and I didn't really realize this until I had started writing a novel. When I write a short story, I can work in little increments of time. So I can work, you know, a little bit in the morning. I teach, so maybe I work a little bit in my office at school, a little bit on the bus or on the train. And somehow the little bits of writing that gets done in those pockets of time can add up to something when I'm working on a short story. And I found that to really not be true for a novel. The incremental approach just didn't work for me. My sort of joke about this is that a novel wants your life. It doesn't want, you know, 30 minutes here and there. Like, it sort of wants your life. And I found that I did the best work and the kind of work I really needed to do on the book when I had, you know, long stretches of uninterrupted time. And, you know, finding that time, making that time in the course of, you know, daily life can certainly be a challenge. So I think that was probably the biggest hurdle for me, readjusting my process to adapt to the form of the novel.
Because of that, the way it's set up, and you say it's, you know, two stories, but also the chapters are broken into short sections.
Yes.
And you do jump between Joy's adolescence and the presence. And so there is that sense of almost a short story quality to it, even though we're going back and forth and it all ties up at the end. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, it absolutely makes sense. And I think of it as, and in some ways, you know, this was, I think, was sort of a natural way for me to conceive of the book, but both in the present and in the backstory, they're almost kind of series of mini stories that are, you know, that are moving forward and arcing and reaching a sense of completion throughout the course of the book. But yeah, I did sort of at sometimes think of embedding these kind of smaller stories within the framework of a larger story.
You have some weird characters in the book.
I do. I do have some weird characters.
I'm hesitant to tell too much about them because I don't want to give stuff away, but I will throw that out to you and you can tell whatever you think is appropriate for the audience. But there's some odd characters.
Well, you know, when I do think, and this is true of my story collections too, that it would be very reasonable to say that I have a penchant for the idiosyncratic, and I blame that on growing up in Florida. I'm from Florida, and I lived there from you know, childhood until I was in my early 20s, and I do think, you know, it's a place where the surreal and the peculiar abound.
So let me get this right. You're blaming Florida.
I blame Florida for my go-to excuse for everything, and certainly for weirdness. I readily lay that at Florida's feet. But you know, it wasn't until I think in the last couple of years that I really started to understand and appreciate how much Florida had shaped my sight as a writer, and that draw toward the surreal, that draw toward the idiosyncratic, that high threshold for the strange. I do think that there really is a connection between, you know, the place in which I spent my formative years and the way I write now.
Well, you know, that I find fascinating, because that puts it into a whole new perspective for me, because one of my favorite authors is Carl Hiaasen, who has made a career out of writing about the peculiarities of Florida in both nonfiction and fiction, and as well as for young readers. And it is so. Was there ever a thought to put the book in Florida, to have its action take place in Florida?
Yeah. Well, it's Joy, as you know, Joy the narrator is moving toward Florida. And on the second part, but really, you know, there's a little bit of Florida, but it's probably the last, you know, quarter of the book,
right?
At the most. I did try some versions of the second part that were all set in one place. Actually, never in Florida, but in different places. And really found that I there was something about sort of the chemistry and the movement and the unpredictability of being on the road that I felt was really important to the energy of the second part of the book. And, you know, this is, I think, somewhat true of my story collection, The Isle of Youth, in which some stories are set in Florida, and then the other locales are wide-ranging. We have, you know, Patagonia and Antarctica and all kinds of other places. And at some point, readers said, you know, why not just make this a book of Florida stories? Wouldn't that make a certain thematic sense? But I think for me, you know, I'm at a point where it's interesting to me to incorporate Florida and my homeland into my work, but I sort of there's always a push-pull for me where I want to bring Florida in, but I also want it to be bigger and more expansive than Florida at the same time.
So, for example, you have a character in the book, Darcy, who wears angel wings that she makes with feathers, and then she talks to her dead mother in a basement tunnel.
Yes.
Now, you could say, well, okay, this happened after the illness, this happened in dystopian sense, but I think what you're saying is, no, that could happen in Florida right now.
If for anyone who's on social media, I heartily recommend you follow Florida Man on Twitter, and you will just see the wide range of what is possible in our southernmost states.
Possible, yes.
Yeah, anything is possible in Florida.
Laura Vandenberg will read Find Me tomorrow at 8 o'clock at the Huxley Theater in the New York State Museum in Albany. At 4:15, she will hold an informal seminar in the Standish Room in the Science Library on the UAlbany Uptown campus. You can visit the New York State Writers Institute online for more information or on our website at wamc.org/roundtable. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.